Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots, independent media, and our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel. Producer Drew Tirico is at the controls. On today's program, the Champaign police believe it's illegal to watch them and videotape them. And in fact, they've charged a local man with a felony for doing so. We'll be talking to Martel Miller, who is in the studio with us, and we'll also be hearing a little bit about the future of wireless internet. We'll hear from Harold Feld, who spoke at last week's Community Wireless Networks conference held here in Champaign. You definitely want to stay tuned. Well, thank you for joining us in the studio today, Martel.
How you doing?
Doing pretty well. I wish you were under better circumstances, but we'll cut right to the chase here. Is that this week you were charged with felony eavesdropping for videotaping the Champaign police?
Yes, I was.
And so, where were you videotaping the Champaign police?
I was on Bradley in the corner of Willis, taping a traffic stop.
Okay, now you've been doing this as on a consistent basis as part of an organization that you founded called VIA, right?
Yes, I have. And we had notified the mayor, the chief of police, and the city manager that we will have a citizen watch.
And a citizen watch is what?
Oh, we'll go around and tape like traffic stops, events in the park and stuff. Just stuff in the community.
So why are you specifically taping traffic stops?
Oh, we're just taping traffic stops just to see how our traffic stops are done in our community and done in other communities.
Now, when you say your community and other communities, are you talking about things that happen more in the black community in the North End versus what happened elsewhere in the city?
Yes, I am.
And so what is different about how these traffic stops happen?
To me, it seems like when we're stopped, it's more into an investigation instead of like a regular traffic stop. When black people are approached, it's like, where's your license? Do you have your insurance card? Or are you in your registration? On other stops, they approach the car and say, sir, reason I'm stopping you because you failed to stop at the stop sign, or you didn't use your turn signal or improper lane use it. That they tell our counterparts, why are they being stopped? Us, we go straight into investigations.
And so you feel there's some differential treatment then going on?
Yes, I do.
And this is something, so you're videotaping to document this?
Yeah. We made a documentary.
And about how many hours of videotape have you taken of various traffic stops?
Oh, we probably got about a good 4 hours.
4 hours of tape, huh?
4 hours of tape.
So you said you made a documentary, Martel. What did you do with the documentary?
First we edited it and got it down where we could play it on UPTV, but now we can't be able to play it on UPTV because it's been seized.
It's been seized. So UPTV is Urbana Public Television. That's the public access station in Urbana. So who seized it?
I gave it to Chris, and Chris over there said that his boss, and to me it's... I got a paper that got Urbana Police Department, I guess the legal department of the city.
So they sent Chris an email?
Yes, they sent him an email.
They sent him an email, and it said that they were going to hold, that they wanted him to hold off on showing the tape because of this pending case against you, huh?
Yes.
So when did you first have a confrontation with the police?
My first confrontation was, I think it was August, I think it's 7th, and I'd say about the middle of August.
About the middle of August, a couple of weeks ago. And
right.
So what happened? Were you videotaping them at the time?
Yes, I was videotaping a traffic stop with a person on a bicycle. I let them completely finish.
And so this, I think this is something people probably would surprise some people. The Champaign police were stopping someone who was riding a bicycle for a traffic stop.
Right.
Were they in an accident?
No, he was on the sidewalk. He was stopped for not having a light on the front of his bike.
I see.
And where did this happen?
On Bradley and Willis.
On Bradley and Willis. And so they stopped a bicyclist. Was he African American?
Yes, he was.
for not having his light on his bicycle. This is something which I know I see every day, every night that I ride or I'm out in a car, there's people without lights on their bicycles.
Yeah.
That's a pretty common thing. And so you were videotaping this. Were you hiding? Were you in the bushes? Were you in your car? Were you out in the open?
I was right out in the open. I was right across the street from them. They was on one side of Bradley, and I was on the other side of Bradley. They were on the sidewalk, and I was on the other sidewalk.
And so you videotaped them, and it all ended, and then what happened?
After it ended, I asked the guy that he wants to have an interview about his stop. And we got about a minute into his interview, and the Champaign police pulled up on us, like three cars. And the officer got out and pulled up on his car and yelled at his car, he don't want to be on the videotape or on the audio. I'm taking him audio. And I told him, I'm interviewing him now.
And did the guy who had been stopped, he consented to be videotaped and audiotaped?
Yeah, he consented to that.
And the cop said that the cop himself didn't want to be videotaped?
Right, he didn't want to be videotaped. I don't know why they came across the street where we're at, because they were through with the traffic stop.
And so what'd you do?
I asked the officer, I'm videotaping, and if he don't want to be on the audio, not say anything.
So you told him that he could back off if he didn't want to be on the videotape.
Right. And the next thing he told me, if I got him on audio, he's going to take my tape and arrest me. So I told him he needs to call a superior officer.
So you wanted to get, not get into a conflict with him, but you wanted his superior to come. And his superior officer come?
Yes, his superior officer come, and the superior officer, me and him, has been, as long as we have been filming, we have been seeing him.
Mm-hmm.
And he came there, and next thing I knew, they took my camera and my videotape. And I told them the camera's not the evidence. The tape is the evidence. I tried to give them the tape, but they wanted the camera, too.
Now, they didn't arrest you at that time, did they?
No, they did not.
So it took a couple weeks before they decided. And from what I read, there was a News Gazette article, which is good to point out to people, that appeared on Tuesdays on August 24th. And I read that they actually wanted to get a warrant for your arrest, and the judge would give it to them.
Yes.
You were subpoenaed to court to appear on charges of eavesdropping.
Yes.
And so when you started doing this, to start videotaping the police, I mean, where did you get the idea to do that?
We had been sitting down trying to figure out what we could do in the community that could help our community, to help relations with the police department and our community, just trying to solve some of the problems that we got.
And I know, did you talk to any other communities? Because I know that there's been active cop watching, as it's often called, in like Cincinnati, Ohio, which has had very poor relationship between the police department and the black community.
No, we did not, but I have received some pamphlets on citizen watching.
And did it ever occur to you that what you were doing would be construed as illegal?
No, it didn't. I feel if we were taping them and they were doing right, they should not even have a problem. We'll be proving a point for them that they're good officers.
Did you talk to any attorneys about this before you went out and
Yes, I did. I talked to probably two attorneys.
What did they say?
And they say, as long as it's in public, it shouldn't be a problem. You know, just don't intervene with them or say anything and stay out their way.
Right. So don't get in between. Don't try to stop what's going on.
Right.
But observe. I mean, what's interesting is, you know, eavesdropping, if we think about the common sense sort of understanding of it, it's you think, well, you would be horning in on someone's conversation where they would have a presumption of privacy. Like if I... You know, if you're in a room and I stick my ear up to the door and listen in, that's eavesdropping, right?
Yeah.
But if you're out in the middle of the street talking to somebody and I happen to lean, you know, I'm happen to be standing by my window and overhear you, is that eavesdropping? I mean, so, what do you think the police are up to here then?
I don't really know. I just feel that if they want to build a better relationship with our community, you know, it'd be good to have a documentary on them to show that they're good cops and that they can work on some of the problems we do have.
Mm-hmm. And so what are some of the things that people could see in this documentary that you made that would have been shown on Urbana Public TV if it hadn't been seized by the city's legal department?
Oh, they would have been able to see a few things. They've been able to see how things are going and let me get it right. How things will be going, like on traffic, the difference in traffic stops, the difference in how things are handled in our community, as in the club scenes and the bar scenes.
So maybe you could talk a little bit about that. So what is the difference in the club and bar scenes?
Like at the black clubs, there's always a lot of police around the clubs when they're closed, and like on the campus and stuff when they're closed, there's very few cops. And
I noticed that one club downtown is like Club Extreme, seems to attract a lot of African Americans, and so you're saying there's a lot more police there than say at Joe's Brewery down in Campus Town.
Which
has a similar number of people, right, coming out at night.
Right. And when they outside of the scene of our clubs, they're already engaging in like in riot more. They have pepper spray, it's present in their hands and stuff, and like on the campus, we don't see that.
Mm-hmm. Now, before you got arrested by the police for doing, you did get arrested for this, right?
Yes, I did. Okay. I got to go turn myself in on the 30th and get fingerprinted.
Had you given the police any warning about this? Was this the first time they'd seen you? Had they heard about this any at all?
No, we got police on interviews. We didn't interview a few policemen. We didn't talk to them while we were out. They didn't wave at us. We thought we had a pretty good relationship going on until about 2 weeks ago.
And you even sent them a letter, didn't you, that said you were going to be doing this?
Yeah, we sent the mayor of Champaign a letter, Chief Finney a letter, and the city manager. But we had no response from them on or we were doing something illegal or not.
Yeah, I know. I mentioned that in the News Gazette article that they had sort of, they said, oh, well, we didn't really receive any letter. We got some letter about something, but we didn't pay any attention to it. Is that what you saw in the News Gazette article? Or?
Yes, that's what I read, but mm-hmm. I know it was a little more than that. We had Chief Finney at our forum.
Oh, really? What was the forum?
Our forum was May 1st, and it was about community problems and other things.
So this was a meeting between the black community and the police department?
Yes, it was.
And what did you tell the police department there? What did they get to hear about?
We were just talking about like the traffic stops, how we can we feel like they need a little more diversity. And I was saying to the police, instead of meeting our kids in an investigation mode, you know, come out to the park, dribble a basketball or something, or Just communicate with our kids, like our younger kids, because what's going on now, our younger kids are now, I feel they're getting scared of the police.
Mm-hmm. And so what's interesting, I think, to note is that the News Gazette published an editorial in support of your position on Wednesday, August 25th, that says eavesdropping charge should be dismissed. And I think that's because the News Gazette realizes if it's made illegal for you to videotape, it's going to be illegal for journalists to go out and videotape, because there's no difference between you out there videotaping the police and somebody from Channel 3 or Channel 15 or ABC or NBC out there.
Yeah, I'm a freelance journalist reporter.
You sure are.
Yeah, and that's what I'm doing.
And this is, you know, on Media Geek here, we don't play the objectivity line here. We're definitely in support of independent and grassroots media, and this is one of the things which is very important, is for people to be able to document what goes on in their own communities rather than having to wait for somebody to come around and take the time and notice for you.
I mean, what does it take to be a journalist? What do you think, Martel?
What it takes a lot. For one, in editing, it takes a lot of patience and
But what does it take to prove to, say, the police that you're a journalist?
I thought if I would show my documentary that they would really got to mm-hmm. see what we were doing, but they feel that our documentary should not be showed, I believe, because they seized it.
So you have legal representation at the moment, is that correct?
Yes, I do. I have Bruce Ratcliffe.
Okay. Now, is there anything else people can do to support you? Can you let us know, like, when your next court appearance is, or?
My next court appearance is September 8th.
And so if people wanted to support you, that might be a good place to show up and let the police department know that there is support for you.
Do you know what time it's going to be at, Martin?
It's going to be at 3:30.
At 3:30 on September 8th.
Is that the Champaign County Courthouse?
Yeah, yes, it is.
Okay. Is there anything else someone could do to help support and put pressure, perhaps, on John Pyland, who is the state's attorney, that maybe you should drop this absurd charge?
I just like to have community support, you know, just let them know I wasn't doing anything wrong. I feel that what I'm doing is right, you know, and they really ought to let me show them by letting me present my documentary to the public.
Do you have a website, Martel?
Yes, we do. We got a website. It's www.viaveya.com.
.org,
excuse me.
Okay. www.veya.org. That's Visionaries for Educating Youth and Adults. Is that correct?
That's right.
The name of your organization.
Yes, it is. And not only we do the Citizen Watch, we try to help at-risk kids. We're trying to get mentors and tutors for kids that need help. We're working on our organization.
All right. Martel, thank you very much for coming in, and we'll probably want to have you in as this case progresses.
Okay, thank you.
You're listening to Media Geek. Coming up in just a moment, we'll be hearing about the future of unlicensed wireless internet communications. In the meantime, of course, you can check out the Media Geek website at www.mediageek.org. Send us a comment, paul@mediageek.org. Do stay tuned. Welcome back to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media. And I can't stress enough, having listened to what Martel was talking about here, and I really have to, is that it could be any of us, anybody trying to do independent journalism, who could be arrested because they're eavesdropping, because you're out in public with a video recorder or a tape recorder. I know I've been there in public with a video recorder taping rallies, taping events, and I've seen the police, the Champaign police themselves, out there with a camcorder taping events. And to say that any of us is eavesdropping on something we shouldn't be is absolutely absurd. And I know that it is part of the Illinois Bill of Rights and the Illinois Constitution mm-hmm. that gives you the right to privacy. But within that right, is specifically, it says, someplace where you have a reasonable expectation of privacy. And a traffic stop on a public street or a rally or any of this is not a reasonable expectation of privacy. And so I think this is for anyone who cares about our freedom to both report, to observe, to know what goes on in our own communities. This is a case where Martel and everyone working with VIA needs a lot of support. And I will get off my soapbox now, and we'll talk a little bit about a couple of things that are going on. Speaking of rallies that might be videotaped, what might be eavesdropped on, there'll be some action, solidarity actions going on against the RNC in Champaign-Urbana this weekend. True?
That's right. There's a CU against the RNC Days of Action. It's an organization that's composed of a group of organizations, actually, that are local, that are all committed to seeing some reforms in our government, obviously, and in the way that our government does business. And this is not a protest that's strictly against Republicans. It's more against this form of government that we have that's sponsored by corporations. It's run by a very select few group of people, and by and large, the public does not have the kind of access that maybe, you know, certain people think that they should. So on Friday today, this is already happening. Actually, right now, Critical Mass is riding around town, letting people know that the Republican National Convention is coming up, next
week.
And
that is a big bicycle ride.
That's right. Critical Mass is a bicycle ride that that involves the local people. They get together. This is a nationwide and I think even worldwide organization. It's a loose organization. There's no central dictatorship that says it. It's just people get together, they bike ride, and they let people know that there are alternative methods of transportation out there to reduce oil dependency.
And there's another Critical Mass tomorrow, correct?
That's right. There's another Critical Mass. It starts tomorrow at 11 a.m. And they meet at Scott Park, and that's on 3rd and Springfield in Champaign. So they're going to do a pep ride to gather support for the following rally, which is going to be at 1 p.m., and there's going to be a rally for anyone, non-Republicans and Republicans alike, to let people hear what they're concerned about with what's going on in the government, with what's going on in the Republican Party, and what's going on just in general. After that, there's going to be a march starting from Scott Park, and they're going to march from Champaign around town, letting people know, so bring some signs if you want to show up to that and let people know what's up. And at 4 p.m., they're going to meet back at Scott Park, and there's going to be a bazaar and a really, really, really free market. And there's basically just going to be tables set up with information from local organizations.
And people can share skills or share food. This has happened in a lot of organized protests in the past, and it's been very successful. Is that the end of it for what's happening this weekend?
That's it. That's
okay.
Right.
Okay. Well, very good. Thanks a lot for bringing that to us, Drew. And you can see more information. I know there's a post at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center website, www.ucimc.org. And now we're going to go to a talk given by Harold Feld, who's with the Media Access Project. And this is a legal and advocacy group which won the case against the FCC in the 3rd District Court to have their new ownership rules sent back. But they're also working very hard in the realm of unlicensed wireless internet. And unlicensed wireless internet is that same Wi-Fi that you use in cafes or you can use in your home. It's that little piece of spectrum which allows you to access or network computers without having to go get a license, without having to pay any fees, doing so freely. And in this little talk that was part of the opening plenary of the Community Wireless Networking Conference that happened last week in Champaign-Urbana, he really puts it in perspective with regard to policy and how it is a policy fight and a fight in Washington at the FCC to make sure not only do we continue to have this sort of wireless network space, but that we have more as we're able to do more things and network more communities with information. So now we'll hear from Harold Feld of the Media Access Project.
The wireless stuff came out of nowhere from the Washington perspective. Prior to 2001, the history of spectrum and spectrum management seemed to be pretty well written. We were having a steady march towards property as the great solution to managing spectrum. The neoconservatives had taken over Washington. Chairman Powell had organized a task force composed primarily of people who believed that if you took licenses to use spectrum and turn those into property rights held by a relatively few people compared to the number of people who actually wanted to use radio waves, that would wonderfully and magically somehow make spectrum more efficient, and you had only to look at the wonderful engine of development, your cell phone, to see what the future of spectrum was going to be like. And then a funny thing happened. This little sliver of access for the public, primarily in the 2.4 gigahertz range, but a couple of other places as well, at powers that any licensed spectrum user would turn up its nose at as useless, in overcrowded crap bands, produced the one economic engine in the technology downturn. And money gets attention in Washington, D.C., and it attracts the attention of the companies that were losing money in nearly every operation except their unlicensed spectrum access or Wi-Fi technology. And in the years 2001, 2002, and 2003, there was an enormous enthusiasm about the potential for unlicensed in policy circles. Thanks in great part to our friends at the New America Foundation, Michael Calabrese, Jim Snyder, and others, who really put this on the map and came in and hosted these events and people in Washington discovered, you know, much in the same way that Europeans discovered America. It was there, but it didn't exist until it was discovered. Same thing in Washington. Unlicensed was there, but it didn't exist until it was discovered by Michael Powell and everybody at the FCC, and discovered that, wow, this was really something that was potentially better than property. And it has opened up a window in Washington, D.C., because it is not something that breaks along party lines. It was not something that the incumbent interests were expecting. And for the first 2 years of the excitement around unlicensed, the only coherent thought that the incumbent licensees, the cell phone people, the television people could put together was, but it's ours and you promised. But that free ride, unfortunately, is now over. We are at a point where there is still a window of opportunity for real change, because the wheels in Washington move very slowly, and momentum for reexamining spectrum policy at the national level is there, and it's real, and there are folks at the FCC who are excited about it. But dinosaurs die hard. For me, this is a moment that is very similar to the mid-90s and the Internet revolution. How many people here remember the great optimism and hope that we had in the mid-1990s when the Internet was coming into its own? It was an exciting new medium, and it was going to make government obsolete. It was going to make corporations and the FCC obsolete. The Internet interprets censorship as damage and roots around it. Information wants to be free, yeah, yeah, yeah. But dinosaurs die hard, and they really know how to fight back. And unfortunately, they fight back very well in Washington, D.C., as Bob said. And one of the great tragedies of the mid and late 90s, and why the Internet revolution is taking so long to achieve the results that we want to see it achieve in terms of social change, and it is achieving those results. I don't want to belittle what is being done, but the reason it is not happening at the pace that we expected is in no small part because the people who were deploying out in the field, the people who really had something to say, never showed up at the table in Washington, D.C. And that is why we have things like the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and that is why we have things like closed networks that have been allowed to develop in broadband, why we have rolled back the policies that encourage interconnection in networks, in no small part because people thought Washington was irrelevant and technology was going to save us. The sad truth is that information doesn't want anything. Technology doesn't want anything. These are tools, tools that we can use either for good or simply to keep doing as we've always been doing. We have, as I have said here, an enormous window of opportunity on spectrum. Are we going to rethink how we manage access by the public to spectrum? Are we going to let the public use the public airwaves or not? Now, does this mean that the current Wi-Fi technology is going to disappear tomorrow if we lose? No. Just in the same way the Internet hasn't disappeared, even though we lost on a lot of broadband issues. We will always have what we have now. The question is this technology going to be given the room to grow? Is it going to be given the access and the change that it needs to become something that is free and independent and not something that can be subject to capture by a few powerful gatekeepers in the form of licensees? Or is it going to be tamed and marginalized and put to the side? Because let me tell you, it could go either way right now in Washington, D.C. What we are seeing right now is that the licensees have adopted a new strategy. Everybody loves unlicensed now. Corporations love unlicensed now. Even cell phone companies love unlicensed now. They'll tell you how wonderful it is and fantastic. But, and it's always with a but, it shouldn't be allowed to interfere. We should move.
All right, and that's a little bit of Harold Feld, and if you were getting into what he was saying there as we run out of time, you can actually go and listen to the entire thing and watch it all online, because the opening and closing plenary of the Community Wireless Conference held here last weekend is being archived. It'll be archived in various video formats and various audio formats, and in fact, all the sessions are being archived. I should know, because I helped do it, as did Drew. You see, it's the Indie Media Network. coming forward to bear.
Of two.
Well, no, we had John and Jay, and we had Dave, and a lot of people who are involved in various indie media projects here. All working together, and that's a lot of what the indie media movement is about. So go to www.communitywirelesssummit.org, communitywirelesssummit.org, and you can watch and listen to the opening and closing plenaries, and you'll get to see and hear a lot of the other sessions in the forthcoming weeks as we get them digitized and online. That brings us to the close of another edition of Media Geek. Media Geek's producer is Drew Tirico, and I'm Paul Riesmandel. The Media Geek radio show is free to rebroadcast by non-commercial stations for non-profit purposes. Please contact us for permission to excerpt. Email me at paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.